Thank you, Ben. Well, I bring you greetings from Peter Becker Community, where I'm the Director of Pastoral Care, and you'll often find me there in the chapel on a Sunday morning leading the worship with our residents. And we were started by the Church of the Brethren, some congregations back about, 40 years ago, who felt a need for a retirement community in the community that would serve the needs of everyone. And we've grown to about 500 residents, and I'm very blessed to be able to be a part of that community. And it's a pleasure to be back here at the Community of Faith at Perkasie Mennonite Church. I spent most of my Sundays growing up here looking from where you are up here. I remember I don't know how many years it went, but we went through kind of a banner phase, and before we had all of the woodwork up here, there were, we almost had all the whole wall filled with banners. But the one that always was prominent and stayed was every member a minister. And I think that's still carries through in who you are today. And I think it was very much a part of shaping me growing up with all the relationships I had here, the nurturing I felt, and all the good experiences. I see Ron back there nodding his head, and I remember when you and Laurel first came, and you were our youth advisors, and what you brought to our small youth group, and all that meant to us. But so where was I going? So I really appreciated all the nurture that I felt here in high school, the opportunity to be worship leader, and all of that, and that helped help me see the possibility of being in ministry. I was going to tell you all about my wonderful memories of, you all still don't do picnics in the cemetery, do you? But I have good memories of that. So we didn't have much of a cemetery. It was mainly a big field out, at the edge of town, and spring cleaning and vacation Bible school was not to be missed at the Schlabaugh farm. So anyway, I may be dating myself. This was from 1966 to 1985, so I know some of you were here then. So the title of my message this morning is Salt and Light in Palestine. Deb and I spent 2 weeks with a group that was there in March, and I could talk a long time, so I actually have everything out printed out, and to try to stay in my 20 to 25 minute time frame, I'm going to try to stick to it. But we did go with Lydia and Bryce Brenneman. Lydia was born in Bethlehem and grew up there, came over to the States with her family, attended Ambler Mennonite Church, and is now actually out in Lima, Ohio, where our daughter Emily is pastor at Lima Mennonite. So that was our connection, and we had 15 of us that traveled there and had the not only the opportunity to see holy sites, but also the meet with Palestinians and who live in the West Bank and hear their stories, which was very powerful. One of our group's biggest blessings was our guide, Michul, whose first name and last name were the same. Michul. He was an archaeologist and a Melkite Christian, and I didn't know what Melkite Christians were until preparing for this trip. We read a book by Elias Shakur, who was the archbishop in the Galilee region for a number of years, is emeritus now. But we met Michul, and I mentioned that we had read Elias's book, and he said, "Oh yeah, Elias is my cousin," and so it was a God thing that our guide actually was a Palestinian Christian, because most of them are Jewish. And Michul and his family, they're privileged, I guess, in Israel, because they are considered Arab Israelis, and he has Israeli citizenship. And if you're going to be Arab in Israel, his is the best situation to be in. He actually is able to live in Jerusalem and lives next door to other Jewish neighbors, and his children even went to the only integrated Arab and Israeli school in Israel. But there are many other Palestinian Christians who live in much different circumstances, And as we experienced when we stayed in Bethlehem in the West Bank, there are a lot of things that come along with living in an occupied territory that make life very difficult and really challenge the faith of the Christians there to live out the way of peace. I find it interesting how in many evangelical United States churches, there is a lot of talk about supporting the Jewish nation because they are God's people, but we don't hear much, if anything, about how we can understand the situation for Middle Eastern Christians. And so I want to share a little bit about that today. We really don't hear much in the media about their side of the story, and so I'll perhaps offer some glimpses. And I could talk a long time just on the texts that I chosen, but they're going to be more a reference point as I share some stories. So first, I just want to lay the groundwork a little bit about the mentality in the Middle East. In the first book of our Bible, we're given stories that were told around the campfires of the Palestinian shepherds as they were passing the time, and the younger ones were asking those big questions like, how did we get here, and what's life all about? And so we have these stories from Genesis, and we notice that there's a lot of conflict and violence, even from the very beginning, even in families. If you read through Genesis, there are no good examples of two brothers getting along until you get to Benjamin and Joseph, the sons of Jacob. But beginning with Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam and Eve, we see that conflict and even the shedding of blood. As you may recall, Cain was the brother of Abel, and you can read this story. It makes a nice literal story, but it's also a powerful story of myth, which is explaining larger realities in the human experience. And so Cain represents the farmers, the ones who settle the land and are farming it. Abel represents the sheep herders, the nomads, and they were in conflict with each other. And in the case of the story, Cain has an offering that's not accepted by God. Abel's is. And rather than search his own heart to realize what's going on in his heart and in his life that's making his worship to God unacceptable, he blames his brother Abel and kills him. And thereafter, the consequence of that murder is alienation from God and from others. And Cain only survives because of this mark that's placed on him. And I see that as representing the fear that is created when you live that kind of a life. This theme of violence and vengeance continued on for generations until we get to Lamech. If you're reading in Genesis chapter 4, he is the great-great-grandson of Cain, and he boasts to his wives in the Song of the Sword, "Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech, listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 77-fold. So this mentality of defending you and your family's honor and not letting anyone think that you are weak is still very much alive in the Middle East today. So now I'm going to tell you a story. Our group spent a day in the West Bank city of Hebron. And this is not when we were going through the Israeli border crossing and they're asking, oh, why are you here? Where are you going? Our guide said, do not tell them you're going to Hebron. That will just get you in a lot of trouble. So we were in this forbidden city and we met with a Christian peacemaker team members and an Arab peace activist with whom they partner. And I don't know if you should have, I think most of you know of Christian peacemaker teams. They will go into hot zones and try to be a presence brings the level of conflict down just by virtue of being American citizens and being with the people. So our high point of that day was having lunch in the home of this Arab Palestinian, Hani, and his family. Hani grew up in Hebron and experienced the injustice and oppression of Israeli forces just as many Palestinian youth have. His family lived on the hilltop, which is the land that the Jewish settlers most want to get their hands on. So they always felt pressured, like, we want your land, we want your land. They would give them any money for it, and they would say, no, would you sell your mother? You know, this is our land. We've been here for generations. We're staying. When Hani was about 10 years old, and outside his own house, one of the soldiers in the adjacent lot took a shot at him, and he had to take cover behind the stairs. He showed us the bullet holes in the stone stairs. And you can imagine, you know, getting shot at outside your own house, that's going to raise your anxiety level. It's going to make your life feel much more insecure. And interestingly, in the West Bank, it's only settlers and the Israeli soldiers that are allowed to have guns. You're not even allowed to have a slingshot if you're Palestinian. So as a youth, Hani grew up angry with the occupation, with the political situation, and he looked for ways that he could fight against the oppressors and landed in prison a few times. His family was actually very proud of him for fighting for their honor. But he came to realize that this was a dead-end response to what they were feeling, this oppression. It only ratcheted up the cycle of violence, and it didn't really solve anything. So his epiphany actually happened when he got out of prison, and his family was throwing a party for their son to welcome him back, and the TV was on, and a newscast came on of a Christian Palestinian peace activist. Tell me his name again.
Mubarak.
Awad, that's it. Anyway, it's part of a Palestinian Christian family that's doing all kinds of impressive things for peace. But Hani saw him on the television, and his family was like, oh, look at that wimpy guy. He won't even fight for himself. But as things progressed and the TV coverage continued, he actually, when all the cameras were focused on him at just the right moment, started talking about the oppression of the Palestinians and got the message through. And what that did for Hani was, the light bulb was, this guy is smarter than us, because he realizes that cameras are more powerful than guns in this conflict, and he's getting the message out there. His family thought Hani was crazy for saying that, but Hani was sold on it, and now he is working to come up with peaceful resolutions. He's teaching his children creative nonviolent ways to respond to the oppressive forces around them, and the key is to honor the humanity of both sides in the conflict. He's also finding ways to shed light on the injustice they live with daily, saying that the cameras are more effective at peacemaking than guns because they open the eyes of the world to the truth of what's going on. One story Hani shared with us is with his Jewish settler neighbors. Is really, by international law, there should be no settlers in Hebron. It's Arab land, it's part of the West Bank, but Israel will go wherever they can get their, you know, toe in the door. And so Hani, right outside the gate of his, from his house at his property, the edge of his property, there is a military installation and a settlement. And so there are times when water, some of us this past week experienced the reminder that it's really nice to have electricity, right? And we were out of power for almost a day. And fortunately we had water. But in the West Bank, if you're Palestinian, the Israeli forces, they control how much access you have to water and electricity. And there was a time when Hani didn't have any water available for his family, and so he had to figure out, how are we going to make this work? The Israelis are putting the screws to us. So he arranged for water trucks to come in and deliver water. And after the first water truck came, and how he got them there is a whole other story, but then the settlers were kind of looking on, and he said, "Hey, you all want some water?" And he brought in a second water truck to offer to his neighbors who were settlers. And so what he was doing there was just showing that they did not need to expect a raised hand of hostility or vengeance toward them, that he was offering a gesture of mutual respect and reconciliation. So in the Beatitudes, Jesus offers us a new way of being that turns the old values upside down. Jesus taught that if you want to walk with God and know his blessing, you will find him in vulnerability, heartache, and weakness. In addition, those who identify with the powerless and the marginalized as they seek peace will find themselves persecuted by those seeking power, ease, and comfort. So this is the challenge for the Palestinian Christians. You know, we sit here on a Sunday morning and we read these verses and we say, yeah, that sounds good, but what if you really have to live this, you know? They are living it. They are figuring out how this actually works. And they are salt and light in a culture where conflict is a way of life and the accepted solution is to overpower your adversary with violence and force. Fortunately, after 70 years of hostilities and bad blood between Palestinians and Israelis, some, like Hani, are starting to see the light. They are realizing that Lamech's way of vengeance is not working, and they need to find a better way. So I believe that Palestinian Christians are the key to peace in the Middle East. Western Christians, us, with a heart for Jews and Palestinians, can best serve them by both understanding and supporting Palestinian Christians in their efforts to show their neighbors and the world the way of Jesus. So I want to give you some present-day realities for Palestinians that we should know. Most Palestinians, they're not terrorists. They just want the opportunity to raise their families in the land that they and their ancestors have called home for countless generations. Everyday life for them is a challenge every day. We're very close to the wall between Jerusalem and Palestine when we stayed at the Bethlehem Bible College. And one of it has, it's illegal, but there's graffiti all over the wall. Some of it, amazing artwork. But some of the phrases are educational. One of them was, existence is resistance. Just by existing in the West Bank, they are saying, we don't accept what's been imposed on us, and we are waiting for something better. But everyday life in the occupied territories is really engineered for hardship. There's limited water and electricity. There's endless, like, we were there, and I'm a problem solver. So it's like, well, why can't you just drill a well? And they say, yeah, well, try to get permission and, you know, to do that and the equipment and to do it. There's endless red tape, both to drill wells, to build. There's oppressively long and arbitrary waits at checkpoints for daily laborers. There's a story for each of these points. I'll try not to say too much, but you have to get up at 4 a.m. if you're going to work in Jerusalem just to wait a couple hours at the checkpoint, and there's really no good reason to have to wait that long. It's just to make their lives more miserable. A deliberate effort to keep Palestinians and Israelis separated. If you're Israeli, there's a sign before you go in the West Bank that says, do not go there, it's not safe and it's illegal. There's senseless violence against Palestinians from Israeli forces and settlers. Kind of a shoot first and ask questions later. There was a Palestinian man that got shot in the presence of his family as he approached the checkpoint for no reason other than that he was driving too fast. There's flagrant abuses of international law and civil rights of Palestinians. And there's continuing illegal settlement, construction, and bulldozing of farms and businesses. The Palestinians do not fear tanks. They fear bulldozers because they will knock down their orchards, their olive trees, and their houses. So when we asked our guide, Mikul, how U.S. Christians could best respond to what we saw and heard, he said, learn more about what the U.S. government is doing and let your representatives know your concerns. Israel would not be able to do much of what it does against Palestinians without U.S. support. U.S. taxpayers, you and me, are helping to fund this abuse of power to the tune of $10 million a day. The vast majority of our foreign aid, if you do a percentage pie chart, goes to Israel, and that's funding a lot of what helps keep Israel in the role of oppressor. And there are much better ways for us to support a peaceful coexistence of Israel in the Middle East. So the witness of Palestinian Christians is the key to peace in Israel and Palestine, because the way of Jesus brings dignity, justice, and a common humanity to everyone involved. It takes away the need for vengeance and violence, and it shifts our focus on meeting needs, not pursuing our greed. Just give you a quick overview of a couple things, places that we went while we were there that are Palestinians working for peace. We went to the Tent of Nations. It's an international a farm that builds international friendships, connecting people to the land, camps for children, teaching environmentally friendly farming practices to Palestinians and Israelis. There's Hope Christian School, providing a good foundation of Christian education for West Bank children. And the principal there became the person who started the Bethlehem Bible College because he wanted to have an opportunity for Palestinians to stay in their own country, get their education there, and not move away. They offer four-year and master's programs in Bethlehem. That's where we stayed for several nights. That encourages their youth to stay and work in their own country. The Christian peacemaker teams, Western Christians who are present with Palestinians that can deter violence and document abuse when it occurs. The WEAM Conflict Resolution Center teaches interpersonal conflict resolution just within Arab families for them to learn these principles. And even in the Ada refugee camp, which was close to the Bible College where we stayed, they're working at finding ways to to heal trauma and create a nurturing environment for children and families. You can't imagine the challenge if you're a mom or dad trying to raise a family in a hostile environment and in a place like the refugee camp, where the soldiers sometimes will lob tear gas canisters onto the playground for no reason. And there are signs of openness to change in Israel. I mentioned the desegregated Arab-Israeli school where McCool's children went. They have a teacher who speaks Arabic and a teacher who speaks Hebrew, and they learn that, hey, we can get along. We're kids, whether we're Arab or Israeli, and this can work. There's also a movement called Break the Silence in the Israeli army. You do 3 years of service. When we would go through these checkpoints, the biggest surprise and shock for me was I got to the Israeli border and you look out the bus window and it's like, wait, there's a teenager with an AK-47 there. These are 18 to 21 year olds that do their time, and they ask a lot of them to have the maturity needed to navigate some of the situations they're in. But sometimes they're asked to do things that they find violate their conscience, and up until now they've been sworn to secrecy, but some are starting to talk about it and say, you know, we as Israelis are doing things that we should not be doing. It's not just. And so that conversation has started. I want to finish up with a story. I'm not going to be able to say a whole lot about living stones, but this story will help to talk about it. Many people go to the Holy Land to see the holy sites, and those are the dead stones. But the living stones are the believers who are there creating the kingdom of God here and now. So I wanted to tell a story about how our guide, Mikul, is an example of how to be salt and light in this situation. He shared a time when he was speaking with an older Jewish man, and this man was sharing about his home in which he had lived for many years, and he had the nostalgia that often comes when you're in your later years of life. So he was describing in great detail his hometown where he raised his family. And as he described the town, its streets and landmarks, Mikul quickly realized that he was speaking of Mikul's own hometown back before the occupation, in which his family had been evacuated by the Zionists. McCool kept his composure. He wanted to show respect for this man and his life experience and let him know that he was a beloved child of God. And as the man went on to describe the home in which he lived and raised his family, McCool was struck with the realization that the house that this Jewish man was describing was his own family's house. And so McCool let him finish. Then he said, "Thank you for sharing your story with me. Now may I share some of my story with you?" The old man nodded, and McCool said, "I too share your love for this town. It was the hometown of my family for hundreds of years. Living there brought us much joy and many happy memories for generations. And the very house you described was my parents' home until the Israeli occupation." At this, the old man chafed and shifted like he was ready to take his leave, but McCool touched him on the shoulder and he said, "I showed you honor and respect by allowing you to tell your story. Can you show me some respect by allowing me to tell mine?" So the man settled, and McCool shared the heartache it brought his family to be wrongfully displaced and how to her dying day his mother dreamed of returning home. And he did it in a way that did not degrade or alienate his new friend. The conversation opened a door for this man to feel some of the pain that he and his country's actions had brought to the Palestinians. He no longer has the luxury of ignorance of the consequences of his actions, and he can no longer say that the Palestinians are less than human or not worthy of respect. He can no longer say that Palestinians are not worthy of justice and the fair treatment that everyone expects. And in this exchange, where both persons gave and received respect, the foundation was laid for future conversations and for peace. So may we ask God to show us ways that we can support our brothers and sisters in the faith as they seek the peace only God can give for both their families and their adversaries. And may their example inspire us to seek peace in our own situations, in our families, in our neighborhoods, our school, workplace, and nation. Amen.